This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
The 100%. Same day a park ranger pulled Nolan's body from the water, the sheriff was already telling the public no foul play was suspected before the autopsy, before toxicology, before almost anything. Whatever trust this investigation had, it cracked right there. Two autopsies sit unreleased. An independent team is digging through his phone and a grand jury is waiting. And when investigators told Nolan's parents it was most likely an accidental drowning, his mother asked the same question you did. Why are we so quick to rush this? Yeah, I think what I wonder about with this case is half the problem occurring after the fact. People in places of power where words matter saying stupid shit. And I mean, that seems to be where, you know, a lot of it's already, you know, this is just tinder waiting to be lit. And when you're in the pack of tinder and you are potentially a match, you got to be careful with where you stick your head towards the sun or towards a source of heat. And when you say shit like no foul play expected out of the gate without an autopsy done, that might ignite the whole pile, which I think it did. Now, does that mean when somebody says something stupid like that, that then the entire apparatus of people that would be part of that conversation, does that mean that narrative is then immediately true? No, it means somebody said something really stupid, right, that doesn't necessarily match up with reality and should be judged strictly on the person who said it, why they said it, how they said it, and the answer might just be ignorance. What's your take on the sheriff? Because obviously a lot of people are still making a big deal about that. You know, the sheriff hasn't continued seemingly to go down this road.
Right.
So it seemed to be, I don't know if say deviation, but it wasn't like he continued to dig in the way Nanos has over in Guthrie. It was like, okay, never addressed saying kind of stupid shit, but also didn't continue to say stupid shit either.
Yeah. Even from day one, anytime I do research on a case, I research everyone involved in a case, the victim, the victim's family, the friends around them, and as well as the investigators. And so I said this on day one and two and ever since, you know, I did a deeper research as much as you can online about the sheriff. He went to National Academy. He does not have a bad reputation. He's got a lot of good, non-Nanos traits, we'll say,
yes,
in him. And so then you got to look at, all right, so what's the intent of what he said? What's the impact of what he said? And how did he come to that conclusion? What inspired that person to say these things that, like you said, it lit a tinderbox? And I believe, you know, unintentionally, because people don't want things to get worse, because he made things more challenging for him and his investigators by doing that. And so what do I think the intent was? Behaviorally, based on his arc of his career, I think the intent was to calm nerves from the onset because he's seen these things go sideways, unintentionally, not knowing that he's going to make it worse by saying it that fast.
Yeah.
Now, then what drew him to make a statement like that? Years of law enforcement, years of talking to people, doing interviews, seeing these types of things play out in the past. My guess, again, pure guess, pure conjecture, is that when he first talked to the people involved, the teenagers, everyone involved, his, I won't say gut instinct, because guts are just emotions, but I think his inclination, because of his experience, his first impression was that this is not foul play because of, I didn't see all the things we've been talking about. He didn't see the data supported foul play. Now, what did he should have done? Hold that opinion,
yeah,
and see if, and the days doing the investigation, that theory of his, personal theory, would play out. I think he was quick to the gun because he's trying to calm, you know, the sentiment on this one, but wound up inflaming it by mistake. And that's why he's not doubling down on it. He's just being silent. He's like, whoop, not so. In my mind, there's nothing else he could say to make it right except shutting up. And so, again, I always, in situations like this, when, again, if you've never dealt with a situation this big, when it's not just a loss of life, but a lot of other factors in play, and your public relations person that you have in your department doesn't have experience in at that level either. I mean, they train for this at National Academy, believe it. They train their sheriffs, they train their executives on how to deal with situations like this. And when they get a bloop, the next thing you're watching is what do they do in response to saying something that really fanned the flames or threw kerosene on the fire. And so far, he hasn't said, he hasn't doubled down on stupid like Thanos did so far.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, and look, people are human. They're going to say things that, you know, are not intentional. They should be more measured, but it is what it is. That's what you get when you have humans involved in things, and we happen to be humans. So that tends to be the track that goes down.
And you very well might have had a loving critic to bounce this off of, but if your loving critic has no reps in this either, you're kind of flying blind, and I think that's what might have happened.
Let's talk about the phone for a second, because that's another big thing people are very critical of, because, well, Ben Crump has made it a big deal. And has positioned it as something very suspicious. And look, investigate it. Go to Snapchat, find out if things were actually deleted. And if the answer is yes, you got some reason to ask more questions without a freaking doubt. But we don't have that right now. We have conjecture. We have a parent who says he takes photos all the time. He's always doing this. It's really weird that he wasn't using his phone then. Okay, if I were a parent and I knew that about my kid, I would probably feel that way too. But then you have every other child out there from other boats and anybody who's out on the water or goes out on the water on a regular basis that has nothing to do with this case, never met these people, not even in the same vicinity. I've heard over and over again, a lot of times people just leave their phones on the boat because they don't want their $1,500 hand computer getting destroyed or lost. I was just out on a boat a couple weeks ago. You know what my initial thought was? I'm going to get a lot of really fun shots out here in the water. And then we're about to go in and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to leave it on the boat. And so did everyone else. Yep. And this is a common occurrence on boats. If you've not been out on a boat in the water, jumping in the water, where you could, you have the option to take your phone. You could also very easily lose it. And you're going to be sitting there like this the whole time, not actually enjoying your time in the water. You may leave the phone on the boat. And if it turns out that all the other friends left their phones on the boat, which they claim they did, and his is there, that's not incongruent with the rest of the group. That's him doing exactly what the rest of the group was doing. And it's not that impossible then to think that maybe his phone was still on the boat when they left. And if he was not getting on the boat, that they left without the phone. I mean, again, should it be investigated? Without a doubt.
Yep.
But is it... is it a far-fetched, tall tale, sci-fi horror story that this is an impossibility that he could not possibly have left his phone on the boat and not taken it in the water with him?
It's reasonable.
Completely reasonable.
And that's what you got. You know, every time you do an investigation, you got to go for the simplest explanation first. And is that explanation reasonable for the situation? And you, if you don't have personal experience or data doing something like that, you go to people that have. I have done this exact same thing. You've done this exact same thing. You know, so one of the questions I'd be asking is, I love the idea. Every time you come up with, and even with social media, if people come up with these wild theories, all right, ask questions to flush that out. That's what we do here. I love flushing out all these things because then it helps people critically think through anything so you can actually come back to center again. And so one of the questions I'd be asking is, what kind of cell phone case did he have? I have this one, which I wear around as a wallet, and I have one when I go walking in the rain. I actually switch out my cell phone to a waterproof one when I'm actually going to do something different. If I'm going backpacking, I got a separate one for that. So I'd be asking that question. From everything we understand, a group of people left their cell phones on the boat. That's completely reasonable because we heard there's very limited to bad cell phone reception. They're going to be involved in a lot of things. If you're running around shirtless and shorts, sand everywhere, you don't want to get in your electronics. Are you going to have it on you? Are you going to leave it someplace? Because you all agree this is where we're going to leak our cell phones. And when a boat takes off and you're having a good time, maybe having some sort of beverage, whether it's adult beverage or not, you're not necessarily immediately thinking about that. All these things to me are reasonable and not a wobble yet.
And I want to address this because somebody here said these are middle-aged men referring to us. Kids are keeping their phones close. I don't care where they are. That's a fact. No, it's not at all. Not remotely. When's the last time you were out in the water with a bunch of people of that age? I was out with family and there was teenagers recently. There's tons of teenagers who have spoken up about this exact same thing, saying this is what they do. So no, I'm sorry, you're simply wrong. That is not a fact.
My kids do this very thing. Matter of fact, my daughter is a little bit older than he is. New husband, they got a lake house down in Southern Virginia from their family that they go to. They do what they just did is exactly what my daughter and her husband do too.
So. They do. I mean, and I'm sorry, these kids are out in number one, they're in a spot that has no signal. So you're not using Snapchat,
which I also
found to be kind of an interesting point too, where, you know, they say the family did get the phone and they looked at Snapchat within 24 hours and there was nothing there. Okay, look at it. Dig into Snapchat, get to Snapchat, find out what the hell happened. But it's not, if there's no signal, you're not posting anything to Snapchat.
But that's what,
period of time either.
And then explore it. You know, it's like, hey, not dismissing it, saying, all right, if you think it's, then this is what they're asking in the interviews.
Yes, look
that's
at
why
it.
You do the interviews.
Yes, exactly. Like, examine it. But all the kids are also going, nobody has signal out here, which they don't. I don't want to lose my phone because I'm going to have a drink in one hand and I'm going to be playing in the water. So you want to be like this the whole time? No, I mean, and if you look it up, probably a lot of people don't have their phones in their hands. Again, this is just normal. This is not abnormal behavior out there in the water, on the sandbar, in a place like this. It is not. Anyone who thinks it is simply hasn't lived it, hasn't been there. And it's fine to think that it's crazy for a teenager not to have the phone in hand. I would think so too, but there are certain scenarios, this happens to be one of them, where that would likely occur, where you would have the deviation from them sitting at home or wherever they are with their phone attached to their body surgically.
And it doesn't matter what we think anyway. That's what the interviews are for. That's why you interview them.
Exactly.
And they all said in an interview that they put them on the vote. Okay.
Yeah.
And if everyone's saying the same thing and they're separated during the interviews, that's congruent and it's not a wobble. It's reasonable. Everything comes down reasonable. Is it a reasonable explanation? So far, that's why we keep interviewing. We keep investigating. We see what the autopsy says. We see what the data says. Mm-hmm. Because people say there's no cell phone. I'd be out there because law enforcement's out there testing cell phone pings, because I guarantee you they're doing that because they want to identify as many people out there as possible to see what cell phones are associated with what people, to make sure they did interview someone. Because if there's a gap, in other words, say they interviewed 60 people, but you have 61 cell phones that are registered that are coming in on a cell tower that we're doing that periodic pinging, right? You really think that law enforcement's not going to find out that 61st person, because that one person might have all the information they need. So that's what I guarantee any good law enforcement that's not trying to cover something up will do.
Well, I also wanted to run through the his cell phone being on the boat, going back to the house. Because that's being looked at as rather suspicious as well. And I get the angle. I get how you could look at that, especially if you're the parent. Like, what the hell's going on? If all those friends thought that this is before they knew anything had happened, before they knew he was, like, missing and all that. And if you're driving back and you see your friend's phone on the boat, oh, shit, he forgot his phone. Well, let's give it back to him when we see him next time. That's the end of that thought. It's like, okay, when we catch back up with them on shore, we get it. It's not necessarily super nefarious, exactly. You know, they look it up, they find it. I don't think there's really no evidence anyone was trying to hide this phone. The second they located where it was, they got it to the parents. Mm-hmm. Nobody, like, destroyed the phone. Nobody crushed the phone. Nobody threw it into the ocean, which might have been probably the easiest way to lose the phone. They had the best of all the places you could dispose of something never to find it again. They had the opportunity if they really wanted to. They didn't take it because if there's nothing nefarious going on here, their thought was probably next time we see Nolan, we're going to give him his phone back.
Yeah, and if you think about it too, if you go back to the argument of teenagers always have their cell phones with them, well, obviously not, because if he did, he would have drowned with a cell phone and we never would have got it.
Yeah,
or would have gone waterlogged. So, I mean, that's part of the questions you ask when you're interviewing someone is like, all right, when did you realize you had a cell phone? He didn't have it. And what actions did you take? And what time did you take them? And then when they give you their timeline of what they did, when they give back to the parents, you're corroborating that information with what the parents say. Again, is everyone being congruent? Because what you're always doing as an interviewer, you're looking for open, honest communication, transparency, and vulnerability. Those are the three signs of trust I'm looking for. I'm looking for behavioral congruence between words, actions, and deeds. I'm looking for transparency and maintaining the same tempo of transparency. When I ask you a further question, a follow-on question, a more probing question, I'm looking for that same level, and that's what good interviews and investigators are doing. And so far, from what we're seeing on the outside, from what's being reported, I'm still not seeing wobbles yet, but maybe there are there, but yeah. That's what investigators are finding out. But that's exactly what they're doing right now.
I want to touch on this other one I just saw in the comments section, because I just talked about it. I just did a piece on this, breaking down the timeline of this case, which you can watch here later today as we post it. If you're a member on our YouTube, it drops tomorrow for free. The dad's account of him retrieving the phone keys was interesting. He felt they were being deceptive. At first, they say they can't find it. That was the keys they couldn't find initially. The phone, they apparently gave right up. And I read that account, and it basically, the dad's, through conjecture, basically was reiterating to whoever made the statement that he felt like there was deception going on there. Look, if my kid was missing and all these friends who I trusted, you know, him to be around for all this time don't know anything, I would feel they were being deceptive too, whether they were or not, quite honestly. I would be feeling deception from any human being at that moment in time, because I don't know where my kid is. So mm-hmm. I don't blame him one iota for feeling like maybe there's deception going on, because you're going to be looking for that. You're going to be suspicious. So I get that. But again, a feeling is not a fact. And it doesn't matter how close you are to the victim or not. Feelings are not facts. It is what it is. It's understandable why he has those feelings. I don't blame him. I think most of us would feel the same way, especially if you're freaking out, your son's missing, and you got some flippant teenagers that are just kind of like, I don't know. They also probably don't understand the gravity of the situation at that moment either. The keys were an interesting thing, but again, I also was like, would this feel different if this kid weren't missing? Because initially they said they couldn't find Nolan's keys. And the boys didn't know where the keys were, but one of the girls said, I think they're on the Xbox. Boom, they're on the Xbox. Right. So you have a group of teenage boys that doesn't know where their friend set his own keys, and one of the girls is the one that goes, oh, I saw him on the Xbox. How is that not a regular Tuesday with a bunch of 18, 19-year-olds if a parent is coming to somehow retrieve the keys of their son who's not there to tell them where they are? That seems about par for the course of any 18, 19-year-olds of any race and color, that would be how it would go. The girl paid attention. She saw the keys. The guys, I don't know where they're at. That doesn't read to me as super suspicious. But I get, again, from the dad's perspective, everything looks suspicious.
Right.
And rightfully so.
And to what Humble Beginnings said, too, and to what you're saying, Tony. So the dad has a feeling and emotion, and I never dismiss feelings and emotions because they're generally created by data, experience. Yeah. And so what I'd be exploring now, so the dad says they seem deceptive. So the next question an interviewer and investigator asks is, all right, so what makes you say that? A what question, not why, a what. You know, has one of the kids involved in your son's life given you reason to not believe him ever? In other words, I'm going to look for data points to say whether this came from this emotion you have about deception and the strife and horrible trauma you're going through. Is that emotion you're having caused from data you've collected from his group of friends over the years? Or is it something that you've seen from society? Is it an experience that you had growing up? In other words, I need to differentiate where that your emotion's coming from. Is it coming from something you saw in that group of friends that gave you reason to pause in this instant as well because they have an arc of behavior? Or is it coming from something else in your life, like this horrendous situation you're going through?
Yeah. And a cacophony of people trying to attach themselves to you going,
yes.
Well, it's this. It must be this. I can get you all this attention. It's you know. That doesn't, right. Like, that to me feels very predatory on a family in grief.
Yeah, and because, yeah, what you don't want is someone feeding him ideas that aren't original. But that's why, you know, hey, good investigators, very empathetic, caring ones that are doing these interviews that are very, very skilled with, again, I'm hoping they are, and they most likely are, dealing with people that are going through severe trauma right now, is you're helping them move through theories and conjectures and what people are feeding them as thoughts and ideas and move into, you know, the areas of facts that the investigators can work through. Because you're not going to ever dismiss what the parents are saying, but it'll help you as an investigator create filters. All right, I need to pay attention to this or not pay attention here, move over here. And so that's why just asking, so what makes you say that about these kids? And or in this moment, was it something the kids have done in the past? Was there one friend in particular that gave you a wobble? And give me an exact example. Because you're going to need some data in order to drill deeper. Very specific, not, like you said, not the emotion of it. Emotions are caused by actions. I need you to tell me the action that was taken. Was it taken over here or was it taken over here? Because if it's over here, I don't need to pay attention to this.
Yeah. Feelings are not facts. Right. Everyone is certainly entitled to them, but they are just that. It's heartbreaking all around. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'd be out of my freaking mind if I were that dad right now. He's acting far more, you know, competent. I think I'd be in a corner shaking. I think. I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine. I can't freaking imagine. So I'm not casting judgment at all on them, but I am just trying to look at this from a middle of the road perspective. Could it be this? Could it be that? We don't know the answer to any of this yet, but let's not jump down all of the roads of conjecture and attach our boats to them, no pun intended. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We will continue to follow this wherever it will go.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.